Welcome back, folks, to another episode of the Nintendo Wirecast. Episode, what, 22? 22 now?
I think you got it, my friend. 22
times. Yeah, number 22. Crazy. Time flies.
Sure does.
Especially when you're consistently doing a podcast, which...
Yeah.
If you've ever known me, if you've ever seen my podcast schedule, it's very rare for me to do anything consistently ever. I guess that might be a bad thing.
You get excited. You get excited about stuff, and
You get
busy. You take a lot on.
It's crazy because my days are pretty packed. So again, we're both dads, so we have that going for us.
Yeah.
We're both working outside of Nintendo from time to time. I have a 9-to-5. I come home. I try to do a video. I spend time with my family, and then I podcast. So it's something that. Getting to episode 22 in such a short order is kind of exciting for me.
Yeah, it only took us 22 weeks.
Not too bad. Not too shabby. So not only is it episode 22, but today is actually the third birthday of the Nintendo Switch. It's the third birthday of the best game on the Nintendo Switch, 1-2 Switch, which I think we're going to talk about tonight.
Yeah, maybe the best game of any game on any console.
I think that's it, though. Anything else come out that day? Yeah, I think that's it.
That's the only thing. No other game.
Yeah, So we're going to talk about that. Obviously, it's Breath of the Wild's birthday, too. We had the amazing Breath of the Wild amiibo come out, too. The Guardian amiibo is still, like, one of my favorites of all time. So we're going to talk about that. And we even might talk about something non-Nintendo related, which I know is kind of sacrilege.
Blasphemy.
But before we do any of that, I need to just ask you, how have you been, TJ? What have you been up to this whole week?
I've been really good, completely unrelated to video games. I joined a UFC gym out here, and I've been like trying to find something that scratches that Taekwondo itch.
Yeah,
I've really, really loved Ring Fit, and I'm so thankful that I had Ring Fit to fill that gap between when I could find some meaningful gym training.
Yeah,
and so I've been doing a lot of. Not Taekwondo, but wrestling and Muay Thai and boxing and Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and kickboxing. So that has really been a lot of fun over the past week.
Yeah.
And I'm excited to go back and do that some more.
It's the thing about Ring Fit. So for me, I mean, I was not in any way, shape, or form in the shape that you were in when you started. So working out for me was very difficult to get back into. But Ring Fit... did a great job of getting me to that point. But after a certain amount of time, it only can scratch the itch so much, which is why I started going to a gym pretty frequently. But Ring Fit is such a good jumping off point. I feel like it's been so long since we've talked about it, which is kind of heartbreaking.
I will say that I've lapsed. So I played about halfway through the soft spoiler here. Once you... complete the quest, it allows you to play through a second time with some modifications to the worlds, and I've gone about halfway through that, and it's not that I don't still think it's a great workout, and it's not that I don't still have fun with it.
Yeah,
it's that I was spending a lot of time doing it. I was working out like sometimes two and a half hours a day.
Yeah,
and I can't really do that on top of training at the gym.
Oh, like, for sure.
Like being a dad and trying to fit in all the other stuff, as you said at the top of the episode, if I could get in my one workout every day, I'm very happy.
Yeah.
So I had to make a choice, and I really want to fight, so I'm going to do the fight training.
So you got fight training. Yeah. Anything else?
Yeah, you know what? I did have a minor video game accomplishment go on this week. I have been poking away at Rayman Legends for the past few weeks with my kids, and I finally collected every one of those little teensies. If you don't know what the game is, every level hides somewhere between 3 and 10, I think.
Yeah.
At least little Smurf-like blue creatures, and you find them. And
they are very cute.
They're very cute. And the game is just so relentlessly fun, and it rewards you at every possible turn. So it felt kind of like a much more faster-paced Korok hunt.
Yeah, I can see that.
And you get almost 900 of them, just a little shy, maybe 75 shy. And because you could play it four player and people can jump in and out so easily, I did it with all three of my kids, even my three-year-old. And he was legit making meaningful contributions on some of the shooting levels.
Yeah.
Because he'd just be in the back pushing the shooting button and the rest of us would be up front taking heavy fire, and he would just keep rescuing us, because as long as you have one person on the screen, you can stay alive. So we're all screaming for the three-year-old to free us, get us out of this bubble.
Yeah.
And it was just such a fun experience to share with my kids. And having never played a Rayman game my entire life, and this to be the introduction to that, I feel like I started with the creme de la creme. I started with the... I can't imagine a better game having been there. I believe that this one includes Origins as it originally appeared with the addition of Teen Seas, but I could have that a little bit mistaken.
Sure.
So it's a full game. Anyone who has not played this game, they might look at the art and be like, I'm not sure. The game is gorgeous.
Oh, it is.
It plays so tight. The handling is so good. And the abilities that they give Rayman and all the other characters, you could play as like 50 different characters, although they're all essentially the same. They have some minor cosmetic differences, some extremely major cosmetic differences, and it's just a blast. They all dance. The music is super catchy.
It's like playing a matte painting.
There's
something. So this is kind of like the Cuphead style of like turning fine art into video games, if you want to call that fine art. And I think Rayman Origins was one of the first games to do that, to make a beloved franchise so stylized and so radically different from what we've seen in the past. It's just an absolutely stunning game. I got it on the 3DS. On the 3DS, it's absolutely just gorgeous.
You know when I really knew this game was for me? I think it was like the third world. There's this, at the end of it, there's this music challenge where you actually have to kind of time your attacks to the music. And it's a very fast scrolling level.
Sure.
Auto scroll. And it was a mariachi culinary version of Eye of the Tiger. And nice. I was like, okay, this game has something going on.
Yeah.
I love this. And then I've realized as I played through the game a little bit more, it was a reoccurring motif where they have the final stage of every one of the new ones, the Origins, but the, I guess Legends stages, have a music number. And they're hilarious. Some of them sound like they're original. One of them is like Black Betty, I think. So you have all these these little monsters like going blah, 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 blah.
I never picked that out when I played it. I never did.
Are you kidding me? Oh, man, it's so funny. It cracks me up, the humor that's in the game and the level of detail that's put in this. I don't know how it was off my radar for so long. I really don't.
I am going to show my age here just a bit. My first Rayman game was on the Jaguar Atari back in about 1995 or 1996. It was the first Rayman. I think it first came out on Jaguar. I think that was the very first place it started. Then it got ported over to the PS1. But it was a very, very difficult game. But it's very similar to what you see right now in Rayman Origins, where it was a side-scroller. It was a collectathon. You had to collect all these little guys and free people from cages. So there's a lot of what made Rayman great. And then we had kind of the dark era of Rayman games when the N64 era and the 3D era, everything that was 2D had to be made into 3D at that point, whether it was designed for that or not. And Rayman unfortunately fell into that too. But yeah, I think right around like the Xbox 360 era, companies started to realize that we can do 2D. There's a market for it still, and we can start taking these great, amazing games that were in 2D initially and bring them back to their glory. I think like with New Super Mario Brothers back in the DS back in the day, that was like this big departure. And then obviously Rayman Origins is just great. It's pretty cheap too. So you, dear listener, if you have never played it, there is a demo on the eShop, I think, that you can at least give it a shot. It's a great game. It really is. Even I think like 7 years later now that it's, I think it came out 7 years ago on the Wii U, I think.
I think so. Right. I put it up there with the greats. I enjoyed it every bit as much as any side-scrolling Mario that I've ever played, way more than most side-scrollers that I've played. It's a titan, and Ubisoft nailed it. I think it's definitely worth the attention. How about you? You play anything exciting this week?
Have all right, strap
personal
in.
Accomplishments?
So we're gonna do this. Today is March 3rd, right? March 3rd?
Well, not for me, but...
So it's March 4th for you. So yes, I said before it's the 3-year anniversary of the Nintendo Switch. But what today was supposed to be was the release date for Final Fantasy VII Remake. It was supposed to come out today. I took the day off in preparation of this game coming out so I could just play it all day and do nothing else. And unfortunately, it got pushed back to April 10th, so it's still over a month away. But the good folks at Square Enix were kind enough to release a demo on the eShop, which I wish it was on the eShop. They released a demo on PS4. It is about 45 minutes long, and it is everything I hoped it could be. It's a modified demo from what I played at E3, but much, much better. Much more just fleshed out. There's cutscenes. There's just insanely good dialogue between Cloud and Barrett and the rest of the crew. It is everything I wanted it to be. And I've played the demo 3 times now. Wow. And there is multiple play styles for this game. There is a classic mode that if you're more of an RPG fan, your characters will fight pretty much on their own. They will do everything you'd want them to do just without any interaction. But you can control the menu system, so you can cast spells and you can do like bigger attacks. So it's more like a traditional RPG, sort of. Then there is a standard mode, which is just like a good old-fashioned like action RPG. So if you've ever played Kingdom Hearts, it's very, very similar to Kingdom Hearts. Just an absolutely fantastic, breathtaking game. Believe it or not, my daughter's obsessed with Final Fantasy II. She's a young, young girl. But she beat the demo on her own with no assistance, which I was shocked by. Like, absolutely shocked by. Granted, she was playing on easy mode, but still, I mean, it was an accomplishment. Like, I watched her take down this big scorpion boss, and it was just absolutely amazing. But the game is fun. It's absolutely just a breathtaking experience. It's in 4K. It's in HDR. And Nintendo fans, I know you don't know what those terms are because we just don't get any of that stuff ever.
What is that stuff?
It's gorgeous is what it is. But yeah, 4K HDR, everything is great. It's smooth. It is just perfect.
Now, do you know if this game is going to be a PlayStation exclusive?
It is for a year.
For 1 year, and then 1 year. It could appear at other places.
So it was supposed to be an exclusive until March 3rd, 2021. They've bumped that up now until April 10th, 2021. Chances are it's going to be on the Xbox One and the PC. I can't imagine this game is going to make it on the Switch. Unless
maybe it'll do like The Witcher, where they just find some way to compromise the visuals enough. And this is not an entire remake of Final Fantasy, right? This is just like a portion of it?
This is part one of Remake. It's a terrible name because it's just called Final Fantasy VII Remake. It's not called Remake Part 1. It's not called Remake Midgar. It is just Remake, which is
Have they given
confusing.
Any indication of how many parts there are? What percentage of the original game this covers?
Okay, I can speak to this because I've played the original game many, many, many times. There is 3 discs. A majority of the content is on Disc 1 and Disc 2. Midgar is about 15% of Disc 1, and that's all we're getting in this game is Midgar. Once you exit Midgar, the game is over, supposedly. According to what we've heard
so far.
So this
could be in like 4 or 5 chapters, maybe even more.
My guess is that we're going to see between 3 and 4.
Okay.
So I can see them breaking certain things down a little bit more. But I guess my main concern is Final Fantasy is like this, if you're an RPG fan, or played any RPGs whatsoever, you have big cities, but once you get out of that big city and you can explore the world, you get an airship or a plane or a balloon, and you can like sail and fly and just traverse through all of these places and different cities and towns, and it's a massive world, and Final Fantasy VII is no different than that. It's weird to think that we're getting such a tiny portion. We are stuck in a city for this entire game. Which means I think once part two comes out, I'm really curious to see how they're going to handle that. Like, how are they going to handle the traversing through the world? Is it going to be dumbed down? Is it going to be epic and grand? Is it going to be like Breath of the Wild, where I can go anywhere I can see? There's a lot of unanswered questions. And we really have no idea when any of the other parts are coming out. So I think the only hint they gave us was they have the engine built, and they said that the wait from part one to part two is not going to be anywhere near as long as the development of part one, which makes sense.
And I can't imagine people having that kind of patience. That would be like some Shenmue action if they have like those extraneous gaps that they had from when they first announced the game to the release. But it sounds like it was worth the wait.
I mean, it's on two Blu-ray discs when it comes out. It's 100 gigabytes as far as total storage space needed, which is massive. Oh, it is
never, never coming on Nintendo Switch.
Yeah, yeah. Unless there's a Switch Pro at some point. I mean, granted, the 100 gigabytes, I would have to imagine a lot of that is the 4K HDR textures.
That's true.
I mean, they somehow squeezed Final Fantasy 13-2 on one Xbox disc. And I think it was on one or two Blu-rays for the PS3 version. So if they take things out, they can strip it down and make it fit. Yeah,
just even
fit.
Getting rid of 4K alone would cut that in half.
Yeah, for sure.
So you'd be looking at 50. And there's already a 50 gig game on Switch, isn't there?
I think The Witcher is one of the biggest ones. And then the Wolfenstein game, Wolfenstein 2, Doom is pretty big. Anything running Unreal Engine 4 is pretty big, and that's what this is running too. It's on Unreal Engine 4.
Oh, okay. All right.
So we know it can run. I mean, we know it could potentially run, but I'm not holding my breath for that to happen.
Sure.
I'd love it to.
At least a year to even worry about it, but it does sound like it would take a lot of effort, and it's not just turnkey. They'd have to do some compression. So Nintendo fans would really need to find some compelling reason that it would be worth their while.
Oh, for sure.
I think most of the people who play that probably already own a PlayStation or an Xbox or a PC. So we'll see. That's exciting.
I think it's kind of like Kingdom Hearts, where I think Kingdom Hearts would do well to a certain degree. But I think the audience is already preconditioned to be on PlayStation. But I could be wrong. At this point, I don't want to spend the entire time talking about this. I am a massive Final Fantasy fan. But if you have a PlayStation 4, just download the demo, give it a shot. Just from a pure technical standpoint of what you can do in this game, it's worth your time for sure. Do you have a PlayStation 4?
I do not. In fact, I have not owned a PlayStation since the original.
Oh, wow. All right.
And I don't really feel like I've been missing out. Not that there aren't titles that have come up where I was like, you know, that looks like it'd be fun.
Yeah.
It's just always a matter of time. And if I have to prioritize my play, it needs to have Mario, Zelda.
Yeah.
But it does sound like it's a great game.
I had to dust my PlayStation off to play this game. So if that's any indication of how much time I'm using it.
I do appreciate that I can live vicariously through you.
I will let you know. I mean, come April 10th, I'm going to be talking about this game nonstop. So.
Yes. All right. I'll strap in.
All right. We are done talking about things not Nintendo.
Before
Let's talk about
Nintendo. Our Zelda retrospective, there have been a few small headlines that came through. So we're going to play a little game called How Does This Headline Rate on the Jason Ganos Excitometer.
Oh my god. All right. Yeah, let's
do
it.
We'll roll through these pretty quick. This isn't new news. I think this came out before our last podcast. Yeah. But we didn't really talk about it. What do you think about the pink Switch Lite?
I like it and I don't care. it's complicated because, I mean, granted, it's not a color for me. I just got my daughter one. Like, I just got her one. And I have yet to show her this one because I'm afraid she's going to want it. So
How about Happily Candied? Is she able to resist the coral? It's actually called coral.
Coral, yeah. I was hoping for a Animal Crossing Switch Lite, which I was just disappointed that never happened. So, yeah. I mean, I'm excited, but it's not anything that, like, I'm writing home about.
Okay. Now, in Smash Brothers, you know that I've been really into the spirits.
Of course.
Like seriously obsessed with the spirits. I finally was able to get the Daemon X Machina spirits, which I missed during that spirit event. But we had two spirit events recently.
Sure.
A Cuphead spirit event, which I scooped those guys up as fast as I can. And then most recently, I think this was just this past week, we got Warframe spirits. They kind of say one new spirit, but it is one of the spirits that you can promote to.
Sure.
So it's essentially two new spirits.
Yeah.
How excited are you about collecting these?
Don't care.
Do you follow the spirit events at all?
I do because I have to get them written about.
Okay. So
that capacity, yes. Everything else, I don't care. Honest to God.
Oh, man. I'm so obsessed. For me, I'm going to – I hope – I know this is going to sound like blasphemy to you.
Yeah.
But this is the new Amiibo to me.
Mm.
Where what Amiibo were to Wii U Smash,
yeah,
spirits are to Ultimate Smash for me. Where something about collecting each one and so many of them I don't recognize. So many I don't know where they're from. I've never played Warframe. I don't have any interest in really playing Warframe. I understand it's something like Advance Wars. But I really need to have those spirits. I need to have it. It's kind of like a problem. It's a little bit of an obsession where I hear there's a spirit event going on. I have to mark it on my calendar because I don't want to have another Daemon X Machina event where there's four empty spots on my otherwise like some 1,400 spirits.
Are you at like 100% right now?
I'm at 100%.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's nuts.
They've added over 100 spirits since the base game first launched, including the DLC spirits.
And I have not fired up Smash in... When did the last DLC fighter come out?
That would be Byleth.
Yeah, Byleth. And
not too long ago.
Yeah, I fired it up to download Byleth, and that was it. I have not played since. I don't know. I just, there's something about Smash at this point where unless I'm playing in a room full of other people, I'm not that much into it.
Yeah.
I've had bad experiences online, just like trying to get a decent game going. But I mean, I more enjoy Smash as a party game. Like it was designed to be a party game when it first came out. And it's turned into something very, very different, and it's not a bad thing. It's just not necessarily for me. I think the only thing keeping me going through Smash is who are the DLC fighters? Because I want the Amiibo. And that's it. I think that's really all that's keeping me together right now.
You know what I want? I doubt that this will ever happen, but I want basically Rayman Legends Smash Brothers.
I could see that.
I want like a side-scrolling game where you could pick any character from this immense roster and just have them in a cooperative adventure where you're just trying to progress everyone from left to right and maybe collect a few things along the way. I know that Mr. Sakurai could destroy on a game like that.
Yeah.
He's so good at, well, basically everything. But
yeah.
He took these characters, gave them such a great moveset. I would love to be able to take that exact thing and lift it out of the party fighting game genre and put it right into a side-scrolling adventure. I think it would just be so awesome.
I could see that. But yeah, that gets pretty much zero excitement on my excitement meter. Sorry.
All right. Now, we also had some new DLC just dropped for Luigi's Mansion. How do you feel about that?
I know. Yeah, that's fun. I'm going to pick that up. For sure. Only because my daughter and I like playing this game together. So it's a very, very fun family game. And any new content I can get to extend that out, I'm on board for. So that's like a 5 on the exciting meter.
Okay. You know, I'm not sure about that for me because I do like it.
Yeah.
But I don't know that the DLC really adds anything.
You get the costumes.
Yeah, that just
get the Elvis costume.
Can you use them in single player?
I don't think so.
They're exclusive to the online.
I'm almost
positive. Which I have played, and I do like. You have to. There's some rare ghosts that you can only get in Scarescraper, which is fun, but I don't really know if that's going to transform the experience enough for it to be worth paying. If I was adding like new modes, then maybe something, but just for cosmetic changes, I'm not sure. And then the other big thing is we had a Yacht Club Presents.
Which was
close to a Nintendo Direct as you could possibly have without it being. It was like an orange Nintendo Direct. and they announced, I think, three big things. The first one was Cyber Shadow. And Cyber Shadow, you'll like this, has amiibo support.
Yes, it does.
Every one of the Shovel Knight amiibo give you like a little, I guess I would call it a Shovel Knight themed fairy.
Yeah, it's like a little pet.
Yeah, follows you around. I love that. And it also changes the costume of your ninja to be color coordinated with that particular Shovel Knight character. Does that game interest you at all?
It does. I mean, in 2020, anytime we can get any new amiibo support, I'm on board with it. I feel like we have been in a weird amiibo rut. Animal Crossing is fixing that, hopefully. So any other third-party game that has any amiibo support, I'm good with. And Yacht Club Games has been one of the very few publishers who have embraced amiibo to in a way we've never seen before. So the fact that I'm not sure how well the 3-pack sold. I'm not sure how well the Gold Shovel Knight sold. But seeing that Yacht Club is still going all in with this stuff makes me happy. Like, they're not just putting it out there and saying, okay, we're done. You already bought it, you suckers. They're saying that you can still get good stuff coming from these amiibo. So I am all on board with that.
I'm pretty surprised by it. The Gold Shovel Knight amiibo launches this month in Taiwan. Sure. So we haven't had it yet, so I'm going to try to see if I can get out and track that one down.
Yeah.
We also got a little bit more Shovel Knight news. There's an update on the development for Shovel Knight Dig.
Yep.
Looks interesting. And then also a new Shovel Knight Pocket Dungeon game. Either of those grab you by the gears?
I mean, Dig looks fine. I think it's kind of like a 16-bit Steam World type game. The puzzle game, not so much. I mean, there's a million puzzle games out there. They all just kind of look the same to me at this point.
I'm like that, too. I was starting to wonder if it was a deficiency for me that, like, Tetris, Dr. Mario, Yoshi's Cookie. I just look at all these things and I see the same thing.
I mean, I played Dr. Mario World like it was going out of style.
Me, too. That one was great.
And I gave up on it after a while. It got to a point where I know how these games operate. I'm not saying that's how this Shovel Knight game is going to operate, but they just purposely make things just so irritating to a point where you have to pay if you don't want to lose your mind. I don't think that the Shovel Knight one is a microtransaction fest, is it?
I don't remember.
I think it's just like pay once and you can play it, but I could be wrong.
I kind of tuned half out, I'll admit. Because the most exciting thing to me about the Yacht Club Presents was the Cyber Shadow.
Yeah.
It kind of was giving me some Messenger vibes, Ninja Gaiden.
Sure.
And then when they said amiibo, I was like, what? Are they really going to continue to support these amiibo? That is amazing. So I liked the presentation overall. It was a little cheeky, like professionally hokey. Like they were going for a certain vibe.
They knew what they were doing.
They knew what they were doing, and it was fun. It was fun. I liked it, and I think it was no accident that it looked exactly like a Nintendo Direct.
I think everybody is going that route. Like, PlayStation has this thing called State of Play, and it is a carbon copy ripoff of Nintendo Direct, down to how they show the games, and they have this little slider. Like, it is a carbon copy ripoff. So that's Nintendo did something right. They really did.
Yeah, they did, and it's killing live events.
Yeah, like people, it is kind of sad, but
we don't really need it. Nintendo is not always ahead of the curve. They are a good percentage of the time. Like, they nailed that motion control thing.
Yeah.
But this is one of the areas where they definitely were ahead of the curve. Usually when it comes to online, Nintendo's lagging.
Yeah.
But they were like, hey, we don't need these big events. We could just control the narrative when we make our own and just stream it on the internet. And everyone's like, hey, you're right. We don't need to go to E3. We could just control this ourselves.
I'm to a point this year where I have not committed to going to E3 this year. I think a lot of it is coronavirus, which we had to talk about at some point on the podcast. I mean, GDC shut down. not shut down, but I mean, they delayed it, which is kind of crazy to think about. Pokemon Go is all the events in Japan, South Korea, and Italy are just shut down, which is crazy to think about. Which I get, they're trying to stay on top of it. But I'm at a point right now where Nintendo does such a good job of showcasing everything with the Treehouse, with the E3 Direct. There's really no point for me to go except to get hands-on time with the games. Which I want to get hands-on time with the games, but I don't want to get to a point where if there's an outbreak in this country that I want to be in a room with 10,000 other people. So sure. I'm not sure what I'm going to do yet. I'm hoping they get it under control. I'd like to go to E3 this year, but you pretty much nailed it on the head when you said Nintendo has this covered. Like, Nintendo has everybody covered for E3 with their insanely good online coverage.
I have enjoyed going to E3, and I've been lucky enough to go there a number of times. The E3s that I enjoy the most are the ones that I watch.
Yeah.
Because when you're there, you can't see everything.
Yeah.
And at least in our case, you're working. And so when you're working, you're having a hard time necessarily putting yourself in the exact location at the exact time as events are unfolding.
Yeah.
And so you're missing everything that you could just watch online because you can't physically be there present. And some of those E3s, my favorite moments were watching it on my phone with the people who share in this collective interest. And everybody cheering at the same time, but everyone's got their heads in their computers and their phones. So I don't really think people are missing anything not being there.
Yeah, I agree. I do. It sucks, but I agree. I think E3's days are numbered.
Yeah. One of the best E3s, though, I think, was the Breath of the Wild one.
Yeah.
And that also, I don't want to say it debuted the Switch because it did not, because we played it on the Wii U version. But it was essentially the same game. Before we get complete into that, I have a quick public service announcement, and this relates to something that you said last time where you said Ocarina and then you corrected yourself, and I said no, you're right. And it turns out a lot of people have been wondering about the pronunciation, whether it's Ocarina or Ocarina. I hear people say Ocarina all the time, but let me set the record straight for you. It is pronounced Ocarina. And I know some people are like, oh, TJ is a complete blasphemer of Nintendo. No, look, it's an Italian instrument. It's an Italian word. Oca in Italian means goose. In Italian, just like some other languages, if you add something different on the end, it makes something smaller, cute.
Sure.
Ina is how you do that in Italian. So if you say ocarina, you're saying little goose. And
so it means little goose.
It means little goose. And the instrument is named, it got its name because it resembles a little goose. So in Italian, vowels only make one sound. If you're going to make an A sound, that's going to need to be an A. If you're going to make an O sound, that's an O. So it is pronounced ocarina. There, the record is set straight, so all of you guys can know, inform your friends, spread the news, because there's a lot of information, misinformation out there on the internets.
We got to do this on the podcast more often, these informational segments with TJ.
I don't know a lot of stuff. That one I happen to know. I have an Italian background and a musical background, and so it just never occurred to me. I hear people say ocarina, and it doesn't faze me at all, because I understand that people pronounce things different ways, but if people are going to be correcting people and they're going to be correcting them wrong, I figured that I might as well get the truth out there.
So really quick, following up on the last podcast too, did you get a chance to see the Red Blood Ganon?
I did not look
it up. Oh, you got to look it up on YouTube.
I'm going to look it up. I forgot to do that, but
you got to check that out.
Now, in honor of Breath of the Wild and the Switch, third year anniversary, I thought it might be fun for us to talk a little bit about Breath of the Wild, any lasting memories that you had. One thing I really want to talk about is things that, now, this is not to disparage the game because I flat out loved it. I was down on it at that first E3.
I was so
down on it.
I was shocked.
You almost kicked me off the podcast.
We were very close.
You were somebody grab that guy with a cane and yank him off the stage. He is not.
It was so universally loved. It really was. You were the only person I talked to that had a negative, like, just opinion on it.
Yeah, and I could tell you why that is. And people may have heard me express this before if they've been around for a bit. But the game ran very slow, and Link moved very slow. And yeah. I had been playing Hyrule Warriors obsessively for, I think, over a year at that point. And just the stark contrast between having this very limiting stamina meter and being able to sprint at top speeds yeah. all over the game. Link's top speed in Hyrule Warriors is way faster than it is in Breath of the Wild. So I was like, am I really going to be able to take this game and tolerate how slow I'm moving? The jump button was very far away from the sprint button. And I got into the water within maybe, I don't know, 1 minute of playing, and it chugged down to like 8 frames per second.
Did it really?
I'm like, this is unacceptable. Now, the game it launched with some frame rate issues, mm-hmm. and they patched out a lot of those. So the game as it exists now is far superior to the demo that we played. I just think that I ran in a direction. I did not see a single bad guy. This was a long demo. It was like 30 minutes. I didn't find a bad guy. I didn't find a shrine. I was in an empty land for the entire time, just running around looking for something to do, and I was bored. And I really started to wonder, have I grown out of Zelda? Is this game no longer for me? Because everyone else was like so excited and so riveted, but everyone had their own unique experience. And what I came to really resent the game for at the demo is what I came to love about it when it actually released, because everyone having their own experience is what made the game such great conversation piece. Because everyone's like, oh, I did this. And it just felt so incredible to share what you did and hear what other people did. And I don't think that Zelda, or really any game of its type, lends itself well to a bite-sized demo.
Yeah.
I wish that they would have couched it a little bit differently and said, hey, this is a physics demo. This is a tech demo. And just sprinkled a few bad guys into places that maybe they wouldn't have ultimately been, to kind of give you a chance to see how Link moves and fights. I know some people got to fight.
Yeah.
That's like my favorite thing about Zelda. And I just found myself really not having much to do. So I started to feel the pressure of, oh, my time is almost over and I haven't accomplished anything and I haven't done anything and I haven't seen anything. And is this game just this dull? So I'm very thankful that I've never been more wrong about anything in my whole life. I think it's the most riveting, exciting, thoughtful, deep, immersive video game experience that I've ever had. Yeah. I can hands down say it's not only my favorite Zelda, it's my favorite video game. I 100%ed it in Los Angeles, California, the year that it came out on the Wii U. I 100%ed it in Chicago, Illinois on the Switch. And just last night, I defeated Ganon on Master Mode in Taipei, Taiwan. So without even realizing it, I've completed the game fully 3 times in 3 different places in the world, because no matter how much many other games come out, I keep coming back to this well. There's so much more there. Even though I've done everything, I still find so much meaningful enjoyment out of playing it.
Yeah. I'm in the same boat. I mean, it's one of the few games that I've played consistently since the Switch came out. I mean, obviously, when you look at the launch titles, like, it is the best launch title there was. It is the only
of all time, right?
I would say it is the best launch title from any Nintendo system ever. And that's even bringing up Super Mario Brothers, which is kind of crazy to think about.
Which is amazing. Like, Super Mario World, amazing launch title.
Yeah.
But I think Breath of the Wild tops that. I can't think of any other console that could even say that.
Like, but I think it's crazy to think that I'm still putting about an hour into that game a week, and that is 3 years later. And I'm on the exact same save file I've had all 3 years. I am still discovering things. I'm still just having fun messing with enemies. My daughter's cutting grass and cutting trees down and using like the physics. Like, it's just, it's a fun thing to do. And if we want to kill some time, it's just a matter of, let's throw Breath of the Wild on, let's go hunting, let's go see the bird kids in the Rudo village. I mean, there's so many just weird things to do.
You gotta take care of your little adopted Greedo children.
Yeah, and okay. She still goes and checks on them. They are still doing that. Very well. So it's one of these magical Nintendo experiences where the world is just so big. Even though I know every nook and cranny of that place. But still, it's still fun to just walk from one end to the other, grab a horse, just go hunting, see the sights, go and see a dragon, shoot a scale off its back. I mean, there's so much fun stuff to do.
That game really hinged on travel being an intrinsically fun part of the experience, yeah. And it is. They even, with the DLC, found a way to make a whole new way to travel, which at first I wasn't that excited about,
yeah.
Which was the Master Cycle Zero. But now I love the Master Cycle Zero. The one thing I don't love about it is that it makes me use horses a lot less, yeah. Which I love the horses. And I really, when I first started playing the game, felt like I wish there was like some way to summon my horse to me. And yeah. Then they added that in the DLC. But unfortunately, they added it at the same time as the Master Cycle Zero, so I never really got to take advantage of that while I was playing through it.
Yeah.
But I Master Cycle Zero everywhere because there's no collateral harm if you crash or if you make a mistake or yeah. if you use it against enemies, where I feel a little bit more protective of the horse.
Yeah.
So I'm constantly just rolling up on Lionels, jumping off and blasting them in the face as my opening move.
Yeah.
I love it. And while there are so many fun things that keep me riveted, there are a few small things that I do wish the game had done that could make the experience just marginally better for me. And so sure. I want to see if these are any of the, if you have ever thought any of these things yourself. And one of them relates to the Master Cycle Zero. I really wish that I could ride it in the desert.
Oh, yeah, me too.
The desert is just such a vast area, and the only way you can get around quickly is with the sand seals.
Yeah.
And they're a little bit inconvenient.
Yeah,
to
they're
grab.
Clunky.
And then when you steer them around, it's really not the same.
Yeah.
I see no reason why. Maybe they can't spawn the world fast enough out there. I'm not sure.
You'd think it would be easier. I mean, it's pretty much just wasteland for the most part.
Yeah, and you could hide stuff in the particle effects and yeah. the dust. So, I don't know. Whatever the reason is, it seems like such an obvious fun thing to do, to ride through the dunes
yeah.
on your Master Cycle, but... unfortunately, you cannot, just like you can't ride a horse there, you also yeah. cannot ride the Master Cycle. The other thing that kind of bugs me is once you've beat Ganon, Kilton can give you this like little quest to go track down every Hinox, every Molduga, and every Talus in yeah. the game. And he keeps track of how many you got. There's like 40 of each-ish. Sure. And once you do it, he gives you a medal. But there's not one for Lionels. Ooh. And I really, really would love... I became a professional Lionel hunter in yeah. the game. That's my in-game occupation. Every time a Blood Moon happens, I'm like, oh, I got to go... Hyrule Patrol is got to go handle this. I'm going to go take out all 22 of these guys. And no Lionel medal, though.
Disappointing.
Then, another thing, and we did talk about this a little bit on the yeah. show. I wish so bad that Wolf Link could be co-op.
Yeah.
That just like Cappy or Guigi, just having another player be able to jump in and
it's
be
just
Wolf
mindless.
Link, it would be so fun to just have a little companion that would be the perfect co-op opportunity. I was hoping maybe it might make an appearance for DLC down the yeah. line, but I've lost all hope of that happening.
I feel like Breath of the Wild 2 is going to fix that aspect of it. Not with Wolf Link. I think Wolf Link is done in Breath of the Wild 2, but I could be wrong. But I'm very, very much expecting co-op to some degree. I am just based again on how Link and Zelda were dressed. It looks like they were adventuring for quite some time. They had yeah. all this gear on the back of this creature. Like, they were exploring this dungeon together when they found Ganon. I firmly think it's going to be a co-op adventure.
And I'm cautiously really optimistic. Oh, that would be the best. That if there's anything that I would love to have, it would be for that to happen.
And even if like you could like swap back and forth between the two characters at will to do puzzles, like Final Fantasy VII Remake, you can just push a button and you can be in Barret and you can push a button and you can be Cloud. It's very, very easy and very seamless. There's AI, so when you're not controlling one, the other one is doing something. It's not just standing there doing nothing. But I think the game is going to be just perfect for co-op. And I think that Nintendo really needs to make one.
I'm excited for that. They did such a good job balancing the co-op with Luigi and Gooigi and Luigi's Mansion that I could definitely see so many puzzles, Zelda puzzles, built around that. And they've done it before. They've experimented with it with like a Phantom Hourglass.
Yeah.
And it was fun. Or Spirit Tracks. I forget which one. Where you do control Zelda and Link at the same time. But it would be fun to be able to do it in a Breath of the Wild engine.
Yeah. It would have to be single player friendly.
Yeah, because Zelda is at its core a solitary experience. Yeah. And they have made experiments like Four Swords and Triforce Heroes where they try to make it a multiplayer event, but those games do wind up feeling less Zelda, yeah. I think. And to maintain the integrity of what a Zelda game is and to kind of build upon the experience that they've already established in Breath of the Wild, you do need to be able to play this game solo. Yeah. So
there has been buddy adventure games in the past too. So Uncharted is a good example. Nathan Drake is the hero, and then there is a character named Sully. He's like this older guy, and I'd say about 20% of the adventures, like, he's just trailing like along with you. So even if they don't make it co-op, I could still see Zelda following you around, helping you, giving you cover, shooting arrows at enemies when you're like maybe spinning a door open like with a big wheel. Like, there's so many cool things she could do.
That would be awesome.
Even as a buddy companion. But if you could have the ability to have somebody drop in and play her, oh, I would be so happy.
Yeah, that would be super cool. If Link fought with a sword and she had ranged attack, that would be amazing.
Make it happen, man. Make it happen, Nintendo.
And on the subject of ranged attack, I guess it's okay to talk some spoilers about a game that
is 3 years old.
For 3 years. You guys had your chance. So when you face Dark Beast Ganon at the very end of the game, Zelda presents you with the light bow. I hate that I don't get to keep the light bow after I've completed the game, because the light bow is awesome. It does like 100 damage. Its arrow trails off out of sight, so it maintains its trajectory basically as far as you would need it to. I think that they determined it does have some fall off, but it's so far that it's redundant. And on that same subject, I don't like that once you beat Ganon, you do get that little star on your profile so that it establishes that you've beat it. And it does, as I mentioned before, allow you to then monster hunt for Kilton.
Yeah.
Ganon is still alive when you go back to your play, your profile. I wish that there was
endgame.
A post-game. Yeah. Not that you have any necessary post-game objectives, but I wish that I could have a sandbox world to play in where I can still go and hunt my Koroks, I can still hunt my monsters, I could run Hyrule Patrol, but Ganon has been defeated.
It's complicated though, because Ganon was what was keeping the bad guys out there. Like the Lynels and the Bokoblins, those were all like Ganon's spawn.
So how would
you keep them?
That's a great question, and I would love for Nintendo to answer that somehow. I don't know, because the Blood Moon, you get the sense, I don't know if this is canonically exactly the reason, but you get the sense that the Blood Moon is a direct result of Ganon's presence.
Yeah, so I assumed that.
So you go through and you defeat all the bad guys. You do need the bad guys to respawn at some point to have something to do.
Yeah.
I don't exactly know what the answer to that is. But I just felt like it would be a lot more fun to me to not ever feel like the game can't be beat.
Yeah. No, I'm in the same boat. Or even just talking to NPCs about, like, thank God that's over.
Right.
And something like that.
It could be meaningless stuff like that.
But like Zelda could just be at the castle, like with a broom, like sweeping up like all the debris.
That's exactly what I want. I just want Zelda to be there somewhere where I can go and check in and be like, yeah, that was a great adventure we had, huh? Sure it was.
Yeah.
Excuse me while I go fight some Lynels. So I don't know what the reason is that they could justify.
They could figure it out.
Having them come back. But I think they could come up with something. Let's see. I also don't believe that if you go through Trial of the Sword, all three of those,
yeah,
that the Master Sword, once it's fully awakened, should ever lose its energy. I get that you don't want to make it this unstoppable weapon. So limiting it to 60 is, I think, already like a pretty, it makes it significantly less powerful than a lot of other weapons in the game. I have Savage Lytle blades that are twice as strong as the Master Sword. So it's hardly definitive when it comes to its damage that's dealt. So what makes it so amazing? Why is it really the Master Sword? I guess it can't be destroyed.
Yeah.
And there's that aspect of it. You do keep it forever. But if you've managed to go through all of those trials, I think it's okay if your sword never runs out of energy.
Yeah, I mean, at that point, you've played the game the way they wanted you to play the game.
Right.
So I get that. I get from a design standpoint, too, they don't want to make it where you... Like, the entire mechanic of the game is that nothing is permanent. Like, everything breaks at some point. Even the Hylian shield breaks at some point. So I get them not wanting to get rid of that illusion that there's anything in the world that is all powerful. Maybe I'm overthinking it, but I get what you're saying too, because at a certain point you've done everything they've wanted you to do. It's like any other RPG where you can get like the ultimate weapon. If you spend like hundreds of hours doing side quests, you can get this weapon that you can like one shot any boss with. You've earned that weapon. Like you've earned it at that point. So I get what you're saying for sure.
And there's no way to ever feel like in the game that you've truly fully awakened anything.
Yeah.
Because we've played a Master Sword before where the Master Sword is the ultimate blade.
Yeah.
Evil's Bane. And it is that in this, although it still has limitations. So I would like them to like take some of those limitations off of the fully awakened Master Sword. It actually kind of even makes the experience of the journey more meaningful. Each trial increases its damage output by 10. So you're essentially doubling its damage. It goes from 30 to 60, which is significant. It makes it a very worthwhile weapon to have in your arsenal. But it is the Master Sword. I would love for the fully awakened one to be at least all powerful. You don't have to make it 100 damage, but it would be nice if it could keep its juice.
Yeah. Out of curiosity, do you ever just go back to play the game just to beat Ganon to see how quick you can do it?
Every once in a while, I'll get the itch to raid Hyrule Castle.
Yeah.
And while I'm there, I'm like, I might as well.
Yeah.
And so
here.
I'll smite the demon while I'm in the neighborhood.
I've been taking advantage of like the glitches in the game where there is a way that you can stop him from spawning his like protective armor. Where if you pick up like one of the weapons that you can spin and do like super like damage, like I think your Savage Lytle swords do that, right?
Yeah, they don't spin because you can do it with the Crusher.
Okay, like the Crusher. So there's a mode where if you let, I can't remember, what is it called when Urbosa's Fury, right?
Yeah.
So you can Urbosa's Fury at just the right point, right when Ganon is about to respawn his armor, and it prevents him from respawning his armor. So you can take him down in like 5 minutes, like 5 seconds. It's fun. It's kind of fun just to go in, see how quickly you can beat him, and then get out.
Yeah. Urbosa's Fury will go through that armor, and so will Daruk's protection.
Yeah.
So that's like a good way to cheese your way through Ganon if you don't want to have to do the perfect shields or perfect dodges.
Have you ever tried to speedrun it?
I have not, and it's not really the way that I play Zelda. I'm kind of like the opposite. I'm a super slow runner. If there was I think I might actually hold the world record for the slowest and most meticulous that anyone's ever crawled through that world. And I did it 3 times. I'm definitely over thousands of hours on this game. When it first came out, and this was an arrangement that my wife and I already had well in advance because she was with me, newly with me, when Skyward Sword came out. And so I was like, just to let you know, you know how hard I work. You know what a busy guy I am. I cannot be playing this game for months on end. So I'm going to take 2 weeks off.
Yeah.
I'm going to live, breathe, eat, sleep this game.
Yeah.
I'm going to play on the couch until I literally pass out. And then when I wake up, I'm going to like down an energy drink and I'm gonna get right back into it.
Yeah.
And that's literally what I did for that 2 weeks. She's like, you know, I wasn't sure how serious you were, but when you put on that link cap and you started waggling that gold controller around, I realized how serious you were. And
such a
it
good
was
game.
Pretty much exactly what I said it was going to be. So by that point, when Breath of the Wild came out, she knew well in advance that, you know, I was taking off of life.
Yeah.
And I played that game as hard as a person can play that game. I did the same thing. I took off all of my responsibilities. I was a deadbeat dad for a little while. And I mean, kids were around. They watched me play and stuff. But my wife took care of everything. God bless her. And then I played through all of the main game, pre-DLC.
Yeah.
As fast as I could do it and do everything. And there were some nights where I'm like, all right, tonight's the night. I'm going to go take down that Rudania, divine beast.
Yeah.
And instead, I tried to find the perfect horse for 3 hours. It was so good at diverting me, and I never forced anything as far as progressing through the game. I always did what interested me, and then once it was done, and I put it away until E3, and then we got the Trial of the Sword, and then I played that same way, and then I played the Champion's Ballad the same way. And then since then, I've been able to be a little bit more casual about it, just plunking away here and there as the occasion allows.
Part of me wonders, in Breath of the Wild 2, if we're going to have the exact same land to explore. So are we going to get the same Hyrule that we had in Breath of the Wild 1 with new landmarks? Are we going to space? I mean, it looked like the castle was taking off. At one point.
Yeah. So yeah, I wonder what that's all about. It makes me wonder where in the storyline all that's taking place. Because I think at first we assume that this is the inciting incident kind of early in the game. But it may not be.
I feel like this is after the fact.
Yeah.
I sincerely do. I don't think Zelda was off on like adventures with Link at any point before. And I could be wrong. I mean, I knew they were acquaintances, but it looked like, at least in this, that they've been like, this is like post everything else. Like, okay, let's go in the castle. Let's find the source of all this evil stuff. And then I'm guessing that's where they find Ganondorf, but I could be wrong.
I'm so curious to find out.
I'm guessing it has to be E3, right? It has to be.
I feel like at least they need to check in, because that will be the 1 year mark.
Still coming.
Since they first announced it. Another thing about Breath of the Wild that I really wish they would have done, I think a lot of people share this, is the ability to max out all of your stamina and your hearts.
Yeah, we are at a point where my heart meter, like there's like two hearts missing right now. And that's annoying. I do not like that.
It's annoying because even though you can complete this game and you can get 900 Korok seeds, you can't get two full rows of hearts and three wheels of stamina.
Yeah.
And it just feels like a missing sense of completion.
Yeah.
And just that one last little extra step, I think, would go a long way to making you feel like you've fully beat this.
And nobody wants to trade in their stamina for hearts. No, stamina is much better.
Stamina is where it's at. I had three hearts through the whole game until I had three wheels of stamina. There's also not enough space in the inventory to hold everything if you have the DLC clothes. And on the subject of DLC clothes, how are they not upgradable? It makes them so irrelevant.
Yeah.
Not being able to upgrade these armor pieces. I guess it's a self-imposed hard mode for fashion's sake.
Yeah.
If you want to do that. But I think it would be so just a no-brainer to allow you to be able to upgrade this stuff just like everything else.
Yeah.
So that kind of stuck with me. Oh, that is my Legend of Zelda warning that I got to pick up my daughter pretty soon.
Oh,
and then the last thing that I want to mention, and I put this last because it's the least important to me.
Yeah.
I played this first on the Wii U, and I heard people complaining about these horrid gyro puzzles. And I'm like, I don't know what the big deal is. They're not that bad. These people just must be horrible at gaming.
Yeah.
Because I never had a single problem or single complaint. Then I played it on the Switch. And I completely understood. I was like, oh, this is unplayable.
That's weird. Horrible. I had no issues with it.
Really?
I think there was one motion puzzle that really baked my noodle. But besides that, it was fine.
There's some of them where I just cannot look at the Switch screen in portable mode and also run the puzzle. So yeah. it makes it so that you gotta do that in when you're docked, because otherwise you have no way of being able to look at the screen and move the screen
yeah.
in the orientation that you need it to be to complete the puzzle. And that really just drove me nuts. I don't know why it was so much more intuitive on the Wii U. For whatever reason, I just felt like the Wii U gamepad was more rotatable.
It was probably better. Designed for that.
Yeah, yeah.
It was probably ported onto the Switch, and it's not going to be as seamless.
I think you got it. Is there anything else you want to add before we challenge the champion?
I got nothing else. I mean, it's crazy to me to think that it's been 3 years. I cannot wait to see what comes next. The Switch has been just this constant flow of just quality content. And we're talking AAA games, and then just this flow of ports. Like, I have Final Fantasy VII, VIII, and IX on my Switch, which is just amazing. It's like the best place to play it. So I can't wait to see in 3 years what's going to happen next.
Yeah, you and me both. All right, this is going to be an Amiibo-related challenge question.
All right, let's do it.
Feel free to play at home, see if you can top Amiibo Jason here. How many costumes can Amiibo unlock in Yoshi's Crafted World?
Oh, crap. Bonus, I have no idea. I can't count. I mean, there's no way I'm going to be able to count them all.
Well, now, I'll give you a little bit of a clue. You can use many different Amiibo
yeah.
to spawn a single costume. So, like, you don't have to name every Amiibo.
Yeah. I think it is... I'm going to give you a range of Amiibo.
Sure.
My thought is between 25 and 35.
Okay, you're coming in a little hot.
Is that too high?
That's too high.
Wait, did you say Yoshi's Woolly World or Crafted World?
Yoshi's Crafted
World. Crafted World. Okay, I was thinking the Amiibo costumes in Woolly World.
Okay, now...
Okay, I can do I Crafted think
we
World.
We might have to review the tape because I may have accidentally said Woolly World.
I can do Crafted World. So there's Mario. There's Peach. There is, I believe there's Luigi. There is, I think they're all Mario characters, but I could be wrong. I'm going to say 6.
Let's see. You want me to give you the answer?
Yeah, let's see. Yeah, what's the answer?
You're halfway there. There's 12.
There's 12. Oh man, I was way off.
But there's like 10 different Mario Amiibo that can yeah. unlock Mario. So we got Mario, you got that one. Peach, Yoshi, Luigi.
Oh yeah, the Yoshi, the woolly Yoshi costume.
Yeah, those ones are separate. So you have Bowser.
Yep.
Toad. Weirdly, Koopa Troopa.
That's yep.
an outlier there. Then you have Green Yarn Yoshi, Pink Yarn Yoshi, Blue Yarn Yoshi, Poochie, and then my personal favorite, this is always the costume that I use, the Amiibo Box, which just about any non-compatible yep. Amiibo will unlock.
I was way off. I'm disappointed. I'm hoping next time we do this, I'm going to not be this sad, because that was pretty bad.
Well, I hate to end this on a sour note, but just know, even though you got fooled by the challenge, you are still the reigning Amiibo King.
For now. We'll see. TJ, where can the good folks at home find you?
Check out my video content on the Nintendo or your YouTube channel. If you're at all interested in Animal Crossing or Smash Brothers, I do have a custom Conquest episode that just released, which shows all the alternate villager costumes based on Animal Crossing. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, you can find me at Custom Conquest.
And if you're looking for info on me, you can find me on my personal Twitter account at AmiiboJason. Otherwise, I hang out at NintendoWire.com and on Twitter at AmiiboNews and at NinWire. Anything else to close us out tonight?
If you have been enjoying the show, don't be shy about leaving us a review.
Please do.
It would be much appreciated.
It does help quite a bit. So we are definitely trying to get discovered a bit more on iTunes. It's a very crowded arena of very talented Nintendo podcasters, but we're going up the ranks. We're getting up there. But your help, you could help us get even further. So that'd be awesome. But as I always say, until next time, stay wired in.
Thanks for playing.